Yeah, I'm not really on poll bets this week. I just kind of want to focus more on the race, I think.
I'm just a degenerate and I love betting poll. Welcome back to another episode of Stacking Denny's. I'm Jordan Maccabee of FantasyRacingOnline.com. My co-host Nick Giffen of the Action Network. We are officially two-thirds of the way through the NASCAR season. 24 races complete. Two races left until the playoffs start. Kevin Harvick in victory lane once again. Back-to-back. Gets the win at Richmond, barely beating Christopher Bell, who was on better tires late in that race. Nick, I don't know about you, but after we've seen the two races at Richmond this year, I'm a big fan of Richmond. I love this tire fall off. I love the strategies that come into play. I love the late race. Some people having fresher tires, some people not. I know some people didn't like it. I really liked it. Even though I fell asleep for like the last 80 of the last 100 laps, I was asleep. I really enjoyed that race. And looking at Jeff Gluck's poll, I believe it was 70% said 70.5% of voters said yes, Richmond was a good race, which beat the spring race that was at 63%, and it's number 5 out of 13 races that have been polled at Richmond. But once again, Kevin Harvick in victory lane, he shook up the playoff standings last week by locking himself in, knocking Truex out. Truex was the favorite. They struggled all day at Richmond. Now Kevin Harvick is somewhat in the playoff picture. He has a decent amount of playoff points now heading into the final two races before this playoff starts. So what was your take on Richmond, the race as a whole, and whether is Ford back? Does Ford have the speed now as we get ready to go into the postseason of NASCAR?
Yeah, I mean, those are both really good questions. First of all, as far as was the race good, yeah, I thought it was great, and obviously not just because of the results, but I after the first Richmond race, I said I liked it. I liked the strategy. I liked the fall off. You could pass because of the tires, all of that stuff. I said I liked that. Same time this time through with Richmond. It was very much like the first race. I enjoyed the first one. I enjoyed the second one. Simple as that. I mean, that's about as simple as an answer as it gets. So I thought Richmond was great. Even if I ended up, you know, even if Christopher Bell ended up passing Kevin Harvick, it wouldn't have changed whether that was a great race for me. Still thought it was a very good race. As far as Ford's found speed, I think so. I mean, look at Michigan. Obviously, Kevin Harvick won there, and that's like the fastest track on the circuit outside of, you know, drafting races. And Joey Logano finished fourth there. Ryan Blaney finished fifth. Although I will say Logano and Blaney were not fast at Michigan. They were not very fast. They just finished fourth and fifth. They were in the teens in green flag speed. But Kevin Harvick was very fast at Michigan. We know that. So I wouldn't say Ford as a whole is back. I definitely think Stuart Haas Racing has made gains after looking at Pocono, how well Kevin Harvick ran before getting caught in that accident there at the end. Obviously, Michigan, very good for Kevin Harvick. Richmond, very good for Kevin Harvick. So maybe Stuart Haas is a bit back. I still, you know, am struggling with Logano and Blaney. They weren't fast at Pocono. They weren't fast at Michigan. We know the Penske's are always just good at the short flats in general. And Blaney had another good for him Richmond race. He finished 10th, but overall he still ran near the top five most of the day. So I think that's just what we expect from Penske at short flat tracks. So I wouldn't necessarily say all of Ford is back, but I definitely think Stuart Haas Racing has made some significant gains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we saw, you know, Eric Almirola had a great race at Richmond. Chris Buescher, another Ford, was up there, could have contended. I know we'll talk about him, talking about Watkins Glen. And then, of course, you know, Christopher Bell, Denny Hamlin. Looking at the points, Joey Logano picked up another stage point, as did Ross Chastain, which puts Logano now at 13 playoff points, Chastain at 15, both of them trailing Chase Elliott there with 25, and then Harvick, you know, now has the 10 after his last two wins. Does this – so we're down to two races. Martin Truex Jr. is how many points behind? He's 26 points behind Ryan Blaney. This is going to be a very important week coming up at Watkins Glen, I think, because we know how unpredictable Daytona is going to be. And I don't want to get into Watkins Glen too early, but I feel like is this a must-win race at Watkins Glen for Martin Truex Jr.? Or is because I feel like it is.
I mean, it's either this one or Daytona. They one or the others must win, unless something catastrophic happens to Blaney in one of these next two races.
Let me kind of rephrase that. Could Truex still be going into points getting mode?
I think possibly. It just kind of depends. I mean, I think we're gonna see Ryan Blaney points race at Glen. And, you know, you said not to get too much into Glen, but I think we're gonna see Ryan Blaney points race, which means Truex probably has to race for the win if Blaney's just grabbing stage points left and right. Because the whole rest of the field, I guess we're talking the Glen now. The whole rest of the field is going to have to hit, except maybe potentially Ryan Blaney if they want to be on the winning strategy. I think you can see a few stragglers, like if they have a slow car. Like we've seen Logano do a couple times this year. If he's kind of running in the 20s, he'll just stay out and grab some stage points and try to elevate himself in the point standings. You could have a few of those stragglers, but by and large, everybody should be going for the winning strategy. So if Blaney's going for points, then I think Truex is going to have to be going for the winning strategy. So I think... I wouldn't say it's must win for Truex, but I do think he'll be going for the winning strategy at the Glen. Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously something that we've talked about quite a bit in the past when it comes to road courses this season and the different strategies. Because we saw earlier on in the year, a lot more people were willing to take the points strategy. Whereas now I feel like most people are going to be on the winning or the get the win strategy. Like points, you cannot get into the playoffs on points unless you're Ryan Blaney or Martin Truex Jr. And even then it's up in the air on whether they could. Looking back, you know, talking about championship, I tweeted out earlier today questions that people had. And there was a question about value on Blaney winning the championship at 15-1 on DraftKings. I know we've hit on this quite a bit this season about how much we typically do not like futures bets, championship futures bets. I could not see myself betting Blaney 15 on DraftKings to win the championship right now, just because even, you know, factoring in the possibility that he might still miss the playoffs, 15 isn't long enough for me to even bite there. You know, I wasn't even interested at Truex at 20 when he was at 20 the other week, and I think I saw him at 25 somewhere else. I'm still not interested in that. So do you see any value there, 15-1 championship odds on Blaney, or is it more, you know, bet him to win coming up?
You know, I might go opposite from you here and say, I think there is value there. Let's be real. The probability that Blaney doesn't make the playoffs is really damn low. So I'm not really factoring that in. It's certainly possible, but the probability is very low. We either need Truex to win one of these next two races or two unique winners, essentially. One unique winner from these next two races, or Truex to pass him in points. So,
which I think is, I mean, it's a blown engine at Daytona away.
That's true. Or getting in the wreck at Daytona early, yeah. But I mean, it's certainly possible. So I it's not nothing, but if those are factored in, I still think Blaney's a huge favorite to make the playoffs at this point in time, especially stage points racing at the Glen. Assuming we don't get a new winner at the Glen, then we're really just looking at, do we get a new winner at Daytona? And that's mainly the way that Ryan Blaney will get knocked out, is if we get a new winner at Daytona, which is possible. So maybe I'm a little too optimistic at 15-1, but if he makes it, 15-1 is a steal. I think if we look at year-to-date green flag speed on a race by race basis, and we remove DNFs, or major incidents from each driver so that we don't count those. Like sometimes, you know, like Ross Chastain will spin out and blow a tire and then he'll limp around the next 40 laps and that'll affect his green flag speed. So removing that kind of stuff, I've done this on a race-by-race basis, and if you say the leader or the fastest driver in that race was 100% speed, and then, you know, so let's say somebody went 200 miles an hour, and then somebody else goes 198 miles an hour, well, that's 99% speed of the guy who went 200 miles an hour. So you do that on a race-by-race basis. The number one driver in year-to-date green flag speed when you remove major incidents is Ross Chastain. Second is Chase Elliott. Third is Tyler Reddick. Fourth is Ryan Blaney. So he's arguably been the fourth fastest car this year overall. And
I can't believe Reddick's that high.
I can. He's been so good. He's just had a lot of incidents, which is why he's not so high in points, right? I mean, he's sitting there 14th in points, but the dude has been absolutely plagued by incidents. You know, if you look at his finishes outside the top 20, he's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 finishes outside the top 20 in 24 races, nearly half the season. He's finished outside the top 20. So he's just been absolutely plagued by incidents. But when he's incident free, he's really damn fast. So that doesn't surprise me. But Blaney, to get into the Blaney point, you know, he's fourth in speed this year, essentially. And he's sitting down there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, tied for seventh in odds at 15-1 at DraftKings. So, you know, if he's in the playoffs, I think that's value. If he's not in the playoffs, maybe it's borderline. You know, what we could kind of do is say, well, these other guys who are sitting here fourth or fifth in DraftKings odds are 8-1 or 9-1. So let's say Blaney could be 8.5-1. And let's say there's a, you know, 60% chance of him making the playoffs, then 15-1 seems pretty much spot on. But I think he's probably going to make the playoffs. So I think there may be value there at 15-1.
I understand your point. I don't think I would personally bet it.
Right.
And I think a big part of that is just I don't like championship futures unless I see major value.
Definitely. I agree with that. I'm usually not betting them unless there's big value, but I do think there's potentially value there.
Mm-hmm. I get you. Another question that I know you've tweeted about this before, and I'm really interested to pick your brain now about this. So, Cliff says, if I bet driver A for top 10 at minus 110, and then I bet a different second driver at minus 120, does this affect the value of the bets? I'm now technically betting one driver to finish in the top 9.
You're not actually technically betting a driver to finish in the top 9, because if the other one finishes 12th, you're still betting on the other one to finish top 10, right? So this isn't the same case where Greg Mathurin was talking about, where he needed all the Toyota or all the JGR cars to finish inside the top 10. Because you need all of those in that case. So you need the 10th, and then somebody else had to be 9th or better, then somebody else had to be 8th or better, and somebody else had to be 7th or better. So it's not the same situation. Now, obviously, you'd like to hit both, which means if you do hit both, one is top 10 and one is top 9. But you're also saying driver A could be top 10, driver B could be top 9. Flip around, driver B could be top 10 and driver A could be top 9. So it's still, technically, you are taking away a little tiny, super small bit of value. By and large, you can ignore it. If we're usually playing big edges anyway, you're still going to have a big edge betting both of those top 10s. This is completely separate when you need all X drivers finishing in the top 10 for a like kind of like a parlay bet to hit, which is essentially what that JGR was. It's like this guy's top 10 odds with this guy's top 9 odds with this guy's top 8 odds with this guy's top 7 odds, and then do them in all combinations. That's essentially what you're parlaying there when you're saying all JGR in the top 10. You can't just say, well, I'm now embedding everybody's top 10 odds and just multiplying those like a normal parlay, because now you're starting to take spots away. But on a 1-by-1 basis, right, you could still profit. Like, let's say you have two drivers, you're betting 2-1 to finish in the top 10. You could still profit if only one of them hits, right? So you don't need both of them to hit. Now, obviously, it'd be great if both of them hit, and you want to factor that into your expected value calculation, but it's small. So if I see two guys I like that are in the top 10, that, you know, have top 10 odds, I'm still betting them both. The only way I wouldn't is if one was like super thin value, but I'm usually looking for big value on these top 10s anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of value bets, going back to Richmond here, you had a pretty good weekend betting wise. FanDuel laid out a very generous line on Kevin Harvick, and 130-1, Kevin Harvick to win Richmond. And despite what some people might say, it was real, and you actually won it. Great, great find there. Like, that was just ridiculous. How long did you say that that line was up?
It was about 2 minutes from when I noticed it. I think there was a mad scramble, you know, of, is this real? Oh, my God, I need to get money down, that kind of thing. And I ended up trying to get more money down. The line had already moved, so I only ended up getting $13 down, like $12.91 or $12.92 down, something like that. So yeah, it is what it is. But you know, it was a mad scramble, and I wish I was more organized on that there, because I would have loved to have gotten more money down there. But yeah, it was real, it was legitimate, it was on FanDuel. Not only was it 130-1, they moved it to 110. So if they had just said this was a bad line, they would have taken it off, open it back up at like 24 or 18 or whatever it ended up being. Mm-hmm. But they moved it to 110. Then they moved it to, I believe, 100 briefly. I think somebody said that. I didn't see it myself. Then they moved it to like 42 or 48 or somewhere in there. And then they moved it to 20, maybe 32 and then 24. So like they kept moving it down. I don't remember the exact details because I didn't care anymore once 100 was gone. You know, if they just said it was a bad line, they would have locked it, open it up at the correct number. They honored the bet. They haven't limited any more than they've already been limiting. So, you know, it's a legitimate bet. If people say it's not legitimate, my bank account says otherwise. Okay. Right. So also, I did bet Harvick 20-1 midweek. So if y'all want to forget about that one, I had a much bigger bet on that. I bet $75 on him at 20-1. Nobody's talking about that part. You're just talking about the 130 as illegitimate. Well, the 130-1 was legitimate. My bank account says legitimate. FanDuel moved the line like it was legitimate. FanDuel isn't limiting anymore like it was an illegitimate line. It is what it is. Okay, so there are going to be haters regardless if you're successful. I've learned that throughout the years. And you know what? My goal is I don't let it really bother me anymore. I think it's funny because I call them out, point out how ridiculous they sound, and then go on with my celebration.
I think like one of the funniest parts of that whole situation is that there were people that are respected that weren't on Harvick and Logano last week. We spent a significant amount of time talking about Harvick and Logano because they opened up at what seemed like ridiculous odds at 25 and 20. So that's just what doesn't make sense. And then to go and say that, oh, I hope they pay out, I hope it's a legitimate book, blah, blah, blah. Like, man, I don't even know what to say to those people. Or like, I kind of feel sorry for them.
Yeah. And
like, that's about all you can do.
It was FanDuel. It wasn't like some hotshot weirdo bookie, right? Is FanDuel.
and you know, and people, I saw some people in your mentions talking about, you know, the tracking of bets and everything. And I think we need to make something clear. When we got, you know, when we got verified on Action Network as NASCAR bettors this year, we were given a specific list of rules of what we're allowed to track and what we're not. We're not allowed to track offshore bets, and we're not allowed to track stale lines.
Correct.
So the fact that that line was up for 2 minutes and Nick got it doesn't mean that we can actually, like, it would be against the rules that we were given. Yes. To track that.
Yes.
Like if I get a bet, even like this week at, you know, Buescher opened up at 30 and quickly moved to 25, I wouldn't have tracked the 30 because it moved so quickly. Like,
and that's exactly what happened to me this week. I got Buescher at 30 and Action Network didn't have tracking up yet. Once the tracking started for this race, Buescher was already at 25. So I haven't tracked Buescher at 30-1, but I am on Buescher 30-1 this week. So exactly that situation you're talking about there applies to me this week with multiple bets, the Kimi Raikkonen bet, Chris Buescher bet, and the Brad Keselowski bet that I made.
Mm-hmm. So I think that might be one aspect that people kind of get confused or you know, give them another reason or like a reason to doubt or something, but it's literally like we were given rules on what we were allowed to track. And that is one thing we cannot track. Just like last week, when, Ballybet opened that ridiculous group and had Truex third favorite against Bowman, Cindric and Jones. And I'm like, dump all your money on this. I couldn't have tracked it. Like they immediately moved it. And I don't even, we can't even add custom bets in there, can we? Like, they don't have those group bets.
No.
So I couldn't track it anyway, but we still tweet it. Like,
yes.
It's still documented. It's just not in the actual Action app because we can't. We literally can't. So,
yeah.
Have to get that point in because it's, maybe it's something that's not known, but like, yeah, we cannot track stale.
And I saw multiple people getting the 130-1. So it wasn't just me. Other people got it at FanDuel. Other people got it at Boyd in Nevada, which uses the same lines as FanDuel does. So I have seen several tickets of 130-1 winners on Kevin Harvick. It is legitimate, real books that we got this at. And that's all I have to say about that. I mean, if I really don't like when people decide to poo-poo that because it was a real bet. It's in my wallet. And if you decided you wanted to call me out on that, you're probably blocked now.
Yeah. And there was one guy that just kept going. Like, after you showed screenshot evidence and showed your ticket, like, he still kept going and denying it. It's like, what more do you want? You cannot provide anything else. Like, it's just like, people, I don't get it. It is what it is. I'll get over it in a couple days. But waking up on like Monday, I woke up really early on Monday, and I was just going through Twitter and I saw all the shit. And I'm like, oh man.
And let's be fair, a lot of people did come to my defense, and I appreciate that. A lot of very well known people. I mean, in the NASCAR betting industry, and I very much appreciate all of you. Thank you. Y'all are good people, and I've never been a con man. Like, that's not what I do. So I just try to help you all win money.
And what would you even have to gain to lie about that? Like,
I don't know.
I think the best tweet I saw was, I think it was Action NASCAR Twitter account, and it was a TikTok of
one of my coworkers.
The guy that runs the social. Like, he had 130-1, and someone replied, "It's not a legitimate thing. There's no way that's real." And he's like, do you think I did this video for 26 likes on Twitter?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, what do you have to gain to lie about this stuff? Not to mention, like, the screenshot of the fucking ticket was right there.
In,
like,
the video. From FanDuel. Man. And I mean, yeah. I tweeted about it as essentially, like, right after it moved from 130-1, because I was still scrambling, trying to get more money down. And so I wasn't sitting there tweeting, letting you all know 130-1 was out there, because, well, I got to bet it myself first. Let's be real. And so it had already moved, but right after I was like, here's the proof. It was 130-1. And then people asked for my winning ticket. So I produced my winning ticket.
And you know, what's funny. If Harvick wouldn't have won, it would have been crickets, and everybody would have been like, oh, what a bad bet. Yeah. You know, like when FanDuel, like, I'm always going to go back to the Martinsville Blaney bet that I had last year. I dumped a shit ton of money on it. And people couldn't believe the line at the time, but I didn't hear a damn thing after the race after he finished 11th.
Right.
You know, yep. That's what it is. Another aspect of Richmond, Ross Chastain involved in another wreck.
Shocker. Shocker. Breaking news. Ross Chastain is the crash train.
Yeah. There were a couple controversies, I guess, with Ross Chastain. First, someone tweeted and was like, how the broadcast said right before green flag that Larson's going to let Chastain take the lead. I'm pretty sure that's not what the broadcast said. I'm pretty sure that they played audio. Basically, like, Larson knew he didn't have the best car to start with, so he was just going to – he wasn't going to get in Chastain's way. And it was very clear right from the start, Chastain had a much better car. Like, so I don't think that was, like, an intentional thing. Maybe it was intentional, but it wasn't, like, manipulative or anything like that out of Larson and Cliff Daniels. Like, Chastain had the better car at the start of that race. He had a great car at the start of the race. Mm-hmm. But going to this wreck, you know, Kyle Busch said he got Chastained. I thought it was Kyle Busch's fault. I don't think that was Ross Chastain's fault. Chastain had nowhere to go. He was in the middle lane. There was someone underneath him, and Kyle Busch came down. So I don't know if Kyle didn't see a replay or if he's just trying to push that narrative further of Chastain wrecks everybody, but this is another incident, once again, where Chastain is, yes, involved, but I don't think it's his fault at all. With another Joe Gibbs Toyota. That's the funny thing, is another Joe Gibbs Toyota.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was a racing incident. Obviously, he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt at this point as well. But I do think it was, you know, a racing incident. And it's still fun. It's like anytime Ricky Stenhouse is involved in an incident, you're just going to be like, oh, goddamn it, Ricky. until you see the replay and then realize it, you know, it wasn't Ricky's fault or whatever. It was a racing incident, maybe partly his, partly the other guys. I just think it was a racing incident. They were three wide. Chastain was sandwiched in the middle. Where do you want him to go? You want him to chop down the other guy? Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, at this point, obviously he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt, especially from JGR Toyota's drivers. He's just not going to get the benefit of the doubt. And that's where we stand right now with Ross Chastain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking further, you know, championship-wise, I'm pretty sure it's mathematically impossible for Chase Elliott to not win the championship or regular season championship at this point. 116 points ahead of Ryan Blaney. Then we got Larson in third, which is kind of surprising. Definitely not having the year we expected out of him, but sitting there third in points. Truex fourth, Ross Chastain fifth. One thing I want to note is with all of this chaos and Denny Hamlin finally getting legs underneath him, he's jumped up to 12th in points. Just something like I'm just so used to looking at down in like 20th and seeing him, mm-hmm. but Denny Hamlin's now 12th in points. After I think he had a fifth place run at Richmond or fourth.
Yeah. I will say technically it's possible for Blaney to pass Chase Elliott. You can get 60 points in a race and you can get 1 point in a race. So if Blaney gets a 59 point gain on Chase Elliott twice or a 58 and a 59 point gain, he'll be 1 or 2 points ahead of Chase Elliott. But it would literally take the most craziest of circumstances ever where Elliott would have to finish 34th or something or worse in both races, and Blaney would have to sweep everything, which is not going to happen at the Glen. You're not going to win both stages and win the race.
But maybe I'm forgetting the points system here, but wouldn't there have to be 40 – or no. Wouldn't it have to be 40 cars to get 1 point?
No, you get – I think you get 1 point for finishing 34th or worse.
Is that what it is?
Yep. 35th or worse, something like that. So
see, I stop running my games and I completely forget how these points work.
Yep, exactly. No, I mean, I'll just scroll over to Richmond here. I mean, whoever finished dead last. So 35th place, Eric Jones got 2 points. 36th place, Ty Gibbs would have gotten 1 point, I guess. So if you finish 36th or worse, you get 1 point. So if Chase Elliott finishes 36th or 7th or 8th or 39th at the Glen, because there are 39 cars entered, mm-hmm. and I assume there will be more than 36 cars entered for the Super Speedway race. Usually we see a Biffle, a Gralla, those kinds of guys. So yeah, if he finishes in the bottom two, three, or four there, and Blaney sweeps everything or, you know, sweeps everything but 1 point, then Blaney could still do it. But, I mean, these odds are astronomical.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen.
Right. It's not going to happen. Chase Elliott's going to win the regular season points. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. But it is going to be fun watching, you know, this third through, I'd even say seventh with Christopher Bell from Larson down. And you could even throw Blaney in here. But Larson down to Bell is only a 42-point gap. Truex and Chastain are separated by 1 point, only 5 points between Truex and Larson. Like, there's playoff points on the line there. So, got Watkins Glen, which is going to be pretty predictable. Then you got, of course, we have completely unpredictable Daytona. So it'll be interesting to see how those shake up and end up regular season. One more thing.
Did you see my tweet? Okay, while we're talking points real quick. Do you see my tweet about Michael McDowell and Brad Keselowski?
I missed that one.
They are the two drivers that got 100-point penalties. They are mm-hmm. tied in points. What are the odds of that? They are tied in points and are the two drivers that have 100-point penalties. That's bonkers. That's absolutely bonkers. It doesn't matter for anything, obviously, because, you know, they both have to win to get in and hope there isn't a 17th winner at this point because they'll probably be the one out. But it's still just really, really interesting and coincidental.
What's even wilder is, like, you look at – we've talked about McDowell quite a bit on this podcast. McDowell has 9 top 10 finishes and 1 top 5 this year. Keselowski only has 3 top 10 finishes.
Yeah.
And yet they're still tied on points.
It's because of those stage points for Keselowski. He has 39 more than McDowell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, what are the chances? That's crazy.
That's wild.
One more thing about Richmond before we move on to talking about Watkins Glen. Got this from Evan, a topic I haven't heard much about. Denny Hamlin came into the pits ahead of Bell on that last stop before he had issues with the jack dropping too soon. We got robbed of a close finish potential late lead pass if Denny was still running ahead of Bell. Or it could have been, you know, Bell and Denny passing or potentially passing Harvick. I don't remember this final pit stop or anything.
Or anything.
That's how quickly I forget about like the last race. Like I remember who wins and that's about it.
Yeah. Can you rephrase that? Like what was the question?
There wasn't really a question. It was just like, it was just pointing out that nobody's talking about that Denny was ahead of Bell on that final pit stop before the jack dropping too soon.
Yeah. I mean,
that's, so I'm sure his question's like, why is nobody talking about that? Probably because it's Denny Hamlin.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's one of those things where it's circumstances. It happens. These things happen. And, you know, that if that race had gone one more lap, Christopher Bell wins that. That's the crazy thing. If it was the Richmond 401, Christopher Bell wins that.
Yeah. Once again, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Because, yep. Yeah.
Because Harvick would have passed Denny Hamlin with one more lap in the first Michigan race.
Yeah, Richmond.
Yeah. Well, I keep confusing Michigan and Richmond. I've done this so many times, and I don't know why.
But also, last year when Almirola won, Bell was closing in. And
for New
Hampshire.
Maybe
not past him.
Yeah.
Well, that was New Hampshire, wasn't it?
Yeah. And but
I knew it was a short flat.
But he kind of caught him, and then it just stayed at like 1 second for most of the rest of the race. I actually think Almirola was pulling ahead a little bit in the last couple laps before the dark set in. Like Bell closed, but then with like the last two or three laps, I think Almirola extended from like 0.8 to 1.0 or something. But Richmond this year, yeah, both races, if there was one more lap, the faster car was in second place within, you know, a breath, a couple car lengths of the car in front on better tires.
Yeah, I tweeted out because as soon as Bell passed Buescher to get into second, Junior on the broadcast was like, he doesn't have enough time. Like he immediately dismissed it as not having enough time. And I was like, I love how honest Dale Jr. is with stuff like that. But then Christopher Bell, he would have had enough time. Like he would have passed him in turn one.
Yeah.
Like this wouldn't have been he's going to catch him in turn four, or turn three.
He would have passed him. Two, yeah.
It wouldn't have been close.
Right.
If there was one more lap. It would not have been close.
And freaking my buddy Jim Sonnes tweeting, you know, with 10 laps to go or 14 laps to go, whatever it was, he's doing the math on like how many seconds per lap Bell's gaining. And obviously this is like the last thing in the world I want. And I'm like, Jim, stop it. And then he tweets it again. And I'm like, Jim, stop it. It was so funny. And the one saving grace, I think, Christopher Buescher didn't want to give up the spot to Christopher Bell, which I think was just enough to hold off Bell from passing Harvick. I was worried. I thought maybe I'd have to hedge Chris Buescher at one point because I knew I had gazillions on Harvick. Then it was looking like Bell, and obviously at that point, any live odds are off. So, I was sweating that one hard. I mean, I was still made a lot of money because I had other good bets, right? But I wouldn't have made several thousand dollars. I would have just made, you know, a few hundred bucks probably, or maybe around $1,000.
Mm-hmm. Looking over the last 15 races, I like to look at this stuff. Last 15 races, Chase Elliott has the best average finish, 9.5. Christopher Bell, 11.2, second best. Can you guess who's number three? It's not Michael McDowell. He's number eight.
Bubba Wallace.
Nope.
I don't know.
Kevin Harvick.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Same amount of top tens as Chase Elliott over the last 15 races, and only two less top fives.
Yeah, makes sense. And, I mean, first of all, let's also shout out to Bubba Wallace. He did finish 13th at a track that's not very good for him.
He's
been on a great run last five races. Last six, if you really count that. 14th at Atlanta. He was not good at Atlanta 2. Atlanta 1, he could have won. Atlanta 2, he was terrible and lucked in. I shouldn't say lucked into a 14th, but avoided enough carnage to finish 14th. But since then, these next five races, he has been very good. And this Richmond finish was very good for him. It's not one of his better tracks. So to pull off 13th there for him, very nice day.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think it's all going to come crashing to a halt since we're at Watkins Glen this week, and we all know how Bubba is. Hey, we're not including Indy because of the chaos.
No, I don't think we'll see the same chaos at Glen as we do see at Indy. But there can be some shenanigans at the Glen every once in a while, either in turn one or at the bus stop, occasionally through the S's, like we've seen that amazing finish with Keselowski, Kyle Busch, and Marcus Ambrose, where Kyle Busch and Keselowski got together in the S's, and then Ambrose and Keselowski were just beating and banging the whole rest of the lap, but racing each other clean and hard without dumping each other. That was really cool. That was like one of the greatest laps in NASCAR history. You know, I definitely think Bubba would need to benefit from some chaos, but it isn't unprecedented at the Glen. There have been some monster wrecks at the Glen throughout the years.
How close the walls are.
Yeah. I can remember at least three distinct ginormous wrecks, either on the back half of the track or coming towards the start-finish line on the start-finish straightaway. There have been some monsters. Jeff Gordon's been in a couple. There was the one where I think it was David Ruderman flipped and David Reagan was involved in that same one. I mean, I was at that race. There have been some monster wrecks at the Glen. So don't count out chaos at the Glen. It's just less likely than at Indy.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to get us right into talking about Watkins Glen. This will be our fifth road course race of the season. And Watkins Glen is a higher speed road course. Speed is definitely a factor here. And that brings up the question, you know, Toyota over the year has gotten better. They've struggled mightily at road courses. So it's been the Chevy and Ford show at every single road course this year. Christopher Bell did finish third at Circuit of the Americas. Better than that, Chevy, top five. Sonoma, Chevy, Ford, Chevy, Ford. There was not a Toyota in the top 17. Road America, Chevy, Ford. And then Indy Road Course, you know, all the chaos there, but still only one Toyota in the top 10. That was Bubba Wallace, who finished fifth. Question is, though, does Toyota have a is this where we finally might have some value in betting Toyota, especially Martin Truex Jr., who opened at 20-1?
I will give you a very easy answer, yes. And two reasons. First of all, the horsepower, the high speeds. One of, if not the fastest, Road Americas as well, but has massive tire fall off. Watkins Glen was repaved in 2015. So it is a brand new damn track, newer than Indy. Remember what I said about Indy is I thought the issue with JGR and these road courses was long run fall off issues. Because we saw short run speed from them at Sonoma even. Well, if you take the horsepower aspect, and even lower tire fall off than Indy aspect. Remember, Blaney did a no tire stop at Indy and kept that track position in second place for pretty much until Chase Elliott passed him. AJ Allmendinger was hounding him, but he essentially was still keeping up in that top three or four late in the race on a no tire stop when everybody else took at least two, usually most took four. We could see JGR make even more gains here at Watkins Glen. I think Christopher Bell, especially right now, is the premier road course racer at JGR. I have him higher in my model than Martin Truex Jr. So Christopher Bell, I do have as a 3.1% chance to win the race. JGR as a whole, I have Christopher Bell 3.1%, Martin Truex Jr. 2.6%, Denny Hamlin 1.5%, and Kyle Busch 0.5% for a total of 7.7% for the JGRs. Now, obviously, Bubba and Ty Gibbs, you can throw in a small fraction as well, but let's say 8% for Toyota win. And I actually had it higher at Road America. The issue here is Tyler Reddick has now gone so elite that he's taken up a much larger chunk of the win probability, which saps it away from all these other drivers. You know, while I think Toyota can make gains here and my model could potentially be underrating them, it's still much more likely that Tyler Reddick, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain, Austin Cindric, Daniel Suarez, you know, at least will be faster than the Toyotas.
Mm. I will note, though, that in the past, Watkins Glen has been very favorable to Joe Gibbs Racing.
Yes, it has.
And it's like, for whatever reason. Like, I remember specifically talking last year about Christopher Bell at Watkins Glen, and some people were on him, some people weren't, but I was like, Eric Jones always performed so well in this car. Christopher Bell is going to be perfectly fine at Watkins Glen because it whatever it is with Joe Gibbs Racing. Now, whether that continues with this car or not is going to be something to watch. But the more I think about it today, because I got this question came in from Evan, the more I'm thinking there's value here in betting the JGR guys. Like, you look at Truex, his last four races at Watkins Glen, third, second, second, and first. He's finished first or second in one, two, three, four, five of the last eight stages, or third or better in six of the last eight stages. Is he going to have this? Like, that's the biggest dilemma and the biggest thing to think about this week.
Yeah,
Toyotas just have not. We have yet to see the speed out of the Toyotas on road courses, and
they definitely made gains at Indy.
And another thing, who tested at Watkins Glen earlier this year?
I mean, one from each manufacturer did, but
Martin Truex Jr.
Yeah,
I really like that. So I could definitely see myself betting Martin Truex Jr. this week.
So Toyota's 5-1 to win the race. Now I give them, let's say my model's underrating them by 50%. So then I'm giving them a 12.5%, let's say 12% chance to win. That would be still needing plus 733 break even. Now, I did bet Toyota plus 450 at Indy, but again, Tyler Reddick hadn't jumped that far up in my model yet. Now my model has even more data on Reddick to really take away a lot of that win percentage. Plus, it has more data to show Toyota hasn't quite been able to keep up. So it's got extra data to say, even though Toyota ran better than they have, you add in Indy road course and drop off one of the previous races where they were a whole lot faster, and the average goes down still, right? So even though they were better than they've been at the other road courses, their average goes down because you drop off or deweight other better races from the past. So my model actually gets worse on Toyota now, just despite that weird little quirk. Despite the fact that they went faster than they have all year, my model likes them less. And it's just, that's how modeling works out. And there's never going to be a lot of models are useful. No models are perfect, right? So that's kind of what we say. I saw the useful model. It's just that in this case, it's not showing value on Toyota to win. But I really do think this is going to be Toyota's best road course race of the year, even better than Charlotte road course. I think this is the one for Toyota. But with that said, I mean, Penske's been good here. Like, I remember Joey Logano winning. I remember Brad Keselowski contending for wins with Marcus Ambrose or winning himself. Like, Penske's always been pretty good here, too. And then, obviously, Chase Elliott lately has just destroyed everybody and has been good here. And Kyle Larson has been very good. Chastain and Suarez have been insanely fast this year, throwing the Kimi Raikkonen curveball. William Byron tested here as part of that test that you were talking about, as did Chris Buescher. So it still makes it not very easy for Toyota to win.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of why I do want to bet Truex is because I'm rooting for the chaos. Like, I want Buescher to win. I want Truex. I want someone. I want this chaos. I want 17 winners, damn it. And this is our last chance to get it.
Well, that's why I bet Buescher and McDowell, who have been faster than Truex this year at road courses.
Yeah.
And longer odds.
You know how I feel about Truex, though.
Yeah. We'll bet him for the championship.
He has a soft spot in my heart.
What are his championships?
That's 25. He's at 25.
Oh, and 20 win the race. Yeah, then just take him for the race if that's what you want.
Because I don't see myself betting him at Daytona.
No,
I'd never trust him at Daytona.
He's so good. He's good. He just doesn't get it done. He is always running towards the front or making his way.
I don't like him in DFS because so many other people do.
I don't think other people do like him in DFS for Daytona.
When he starts like mid 20s. I'll always be underweight on that.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I don't think people necessarily like him in DFS. He is just the big name option back there.
If there was a graph of, remember when he finished second Daytona 500?
Mm-hmm.
If there was a graph of like, oh, Truex is really good at restrictor or super speedways, and it's like slowly waning down, but it's still a little bit higher than I like.
Yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying. I mean, if he's back there, I'm obviously pivoting off of him in a restrictor plate, which we'll talk about next week. But yeah. I don't think people rate him highly at restrictor plate races or super speedway races.
That's tough, ain't it?
Yeah.
One guy I want to talk about, Tyler Reddick. Obviously, someone told me he opened at 750.
He did.
At Caesars. Did he? I didn't see that. He's...
And I was too hungover to run my model at that point to see if he was worth a bet.
So one thing I pulled up last year, and I didn't dig super deep into last year, Watkins Glen out of the races, you take away Sonoma, which is a very technical race, and then he had issues at Indy Road Course like everybody else did, and he had issues at Daytona Road Course. Watkins Glen was the worst road course for Tyler Reddick last year. And that is my initial early week without doing much research. Like, I've done so little research of why I don't like, basically what I'm trying to do right now, I'm about to make the biggest bet of my season on Chase Elliott to win this race. So I'm trying to talk myself out of why Tyler Reddick can win this race, even though he's won the last two road course races.
Now you say that, but his driver rating was 87.2. His driver rating at Sonoma last year, where he finished 19th, was 68.
I didn't count Sonoma.
68. Well, because it's slower, I guess.
Yeah, because yeah.
His driver rating at Circuit of the Americas was obviously had some rain stuff, but 76.2. And his driver rating at Indy 77.1, but of course there was the exploding curb deal. He did win stage one and stage two in that race. He was points racing. So he never really had track position because he started 11th, but his average running position was 16th, right? Like, he was kind of hanging out in that mid-pack, and then he was kind of hanging out like 10th, you know, 9th, 8th, 10th, 11th, whatever, and he finished stage up front, but then he had to pit and go all the way to the back, which is what was costing him that track position. But so I think he probably was better at Indy than the driver rating shows, but you're right. If you remove Sonoma, if you remove the rain race, if you remove the Daytona Roval, if you remove Indy exploding curve, Watkins Glen was his worst, but it was, now you're only on a four race sample size or three race.
He was significantly better though at Charlotte Roval Road America. Significantly.
Yeah, I agree with that. And was he points racing at Watkins Glen though? Cause I haven't looked. I think we may have the same issue with Watkins Glen because they were back-to-back races, as with Indy, where he may have been points racing.
He finished fourth in the first stage, did not finish top 10 in the second stage, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, so it's tough to say. It's tough to say, but I just think it's really hard to use last year with a lot of the issues, and especially if you're selectively removing races, and this isn't a you thing, just in general, if you're selectively removing races, you also need to selectively look at the point situation with each race.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't dig that far, but you remember last year, like I think every road course race that we previewed last year, we were like, oh, this is why this data sucks, this is why this, especially yeah. Like Indy road course last year and even Indy road course this year, I wouldn't use that
because Reddick made the playoffs. Absolute
jokes.
Yeah, well, Reddick made the playoffs last year and he made it on points, so I can almost surely say he was points racing at Watkins Glen and Indy, which cost him his driver rating there. I think the average running positions kind of tell the story there, where he was running a little further back because he made some pit stops, especially in the first stage at Glen. I don't remember the second stage or anything like that, but definitely at Indy he was points racing. I think in stage one at minimum of Watkins Glen, he was points racing, which would hurt his driver rating because he only had a fewer laps towards the front and more laps coming through mid pack in stage two, or back of the pack even in stage two. But tough to say. You're right though. You know, there are some extenuating circumstances in other tracks. And I did notice that myself as well. The exact same thing you noticed, where this was like the worst of his normal races or of the normal races, but it's really hard to quantify road courses with all the different scenarios that go on. All I know is Road America is a very fast track, and he won there. And Indy GP, not quite as fast of a track. It is right up there with as far as the two races we've run at this year in Green Flag Speed, Indy Road Course is the second fastest, and there was low tire wear there. So it seems like Tyler Reddick has done the best at the two fastest, and now we go to Watkins Glen, which should be the fastest. If that trend continues, Tyler Reddick should be pretty good here.
But Chase Elliott will be better.
Yeah, there's always that possibility. Always.
But yeah, so when we're talking about comparing road courses this year and speeds from road courses, I wouldn't say Sonoma is insignificant, but I think it's borderline.
I agree with
just
that.
Because it's so much different. Goodyear's bringing the same tire combination this week to Watkins Glen that they ran at Road America and Indy. Mm-hmm. So same tires on all four wheels. But
Sonoma's insignificant. That doesn't help your Reddick case. Because that was his worst this year was Sonoma.
Yeah. But Chase Elliott led the most laps at Road America. And I don't count Indy Road Course.
There you go.
I think this is going to be Chase Elliott's race.
That's fair.
And I've been wrong on this before.
That's fair. My model has Reddick over Chase Elliott.
I don't know what it is. I hate betting Tyler Reddick. And I hate playing him in DFS. I don't know why. I just don't. It's
fair.
Weird.
It's fair. I don't like playing him in DFS because I think he grabs a lot of ownership because he's Tyler Reddick.
Yeah. It's kind of like Chase Elliott.
Yeah. Or there's a few guys like that, but yes, definitely. So I agree with you with DFS. I will say, I mean, I was on Tyler Reddick in his first win, so.
35-1.
25, but yeah.
This year?
Yeah, 25-1 at Road America.
It was 35.
It was 25. 100% was 25.
100%?
I will remember that one for a long time. 100% it was 25.
I just looked this up like an hour ago. And I probably did read it wrong. It was Chastain, 35.
At
some race.
Yeah, well, I got him at 40 at that race, so.
Yeah. What race was that? I think it was Talladega.
Coda and Dega, I got them both at 40-1. It's two wins.
I knew there was a 35 somewhere.
Yeah. I know some people had them at 35 as well, for sure. But I got lucky and got them at 40 in both races.
Yep.
But no.
July 3rd, shot 25-1.
I can't argue with you liking Chase Elliott the best. I really can't. My model prefers Tyler Reddick. But it also says Chase Elliott's, you know, right up there with Reddick.
Last three races at Watkins Glen, Chase Elliott, second, first, and first. Complete domination in 2018 and 2019. And then, actually, 2021 was the race that I bet against Elliott. I bet on Larson, who won that race. Mm-hmm. And I had an odds boost. I had a 100% profit boost at Caesars with it. So I got him at like 12-1 or something.
Which is very, very nice. Yeah.
Yes. But that's another guy. He's at 9-1 over at FanDuel, Kyle Larson. Mm-hmm. Does he factor in this week? Because I feel like we haven't talked about him. Like, it's been the Tyler Reddick, Chase Elliott show this year on road courses. But Kyle Larson was third at Road America. He was really good at Sonoma, which, again, is not very comparable. And how did he do at Coda? I feel like he had issues.
Yeah, he had some issues. He was coming 29th. The whole Hendrick team wasn't that good. Like, Elliott, that was his worst road course race of the year because they hadn't quite figured things out. Now that they figured things out, they've made some improvements for sure. My model says Kyle Larson is 9.6%. So almost 6.9, just reversed percent to win.
Nice.
So 9.6%, which comes out to a break even of like plus 950. It's a little less than plus 950, but you're not getting plus 938. So plus 950 would be like a line you do see. So you see 950 on Kyle Larson. It says that's a good bet for my model.
Looking at, I feel like the books really, like, we've talked about this before when we've talked about road course races this year. The books have nailed these odds. Like, they know who's good. The only misstep was probably Buescher where he opened. You know, you got him at 30, bet down to 25. Potentially still value there at 25. But another guy that you bet early on, as soon as odds opened, is the guy in the Trackhouse test car. Or not test car, but like project car.
It's called Project 91, yeah.
Project 91, which I completely, you know, I tweeted about this and some people put me in my place. This is the kind of stuff I don't give a fuck about. Like, I don't think it's going to do anything. I hope it does. Cool. But I don't care about this at all.
I think it's going to be huge. I think it's going to be huge.
You think he's actually going to have a good car?
See, has Trackhouse not had a good car this year at road courses?
But so, like, you and PJ's little back and forth the other night, I'm on the side of PJ on that argument.
I don't see why all of a sudden they'd build a car any differently that's worse.
You don't think that they possibly could be testing stuff?
They're not going to test with Kimi Raikkonen. There's no way they're testing. They are in this to make a splash. I know you missed the rollout, the whole deal with this ginormous announcement of Project 91 several months ago. They want to make a splash. This is a huge deal for them. Just like when you were questioning whether Suarez would come back to Trackhouse, like I was like, Suarez is 100% a Trackhouse guy. They have their plan. They have their vision. This is important to them. They want to make this monstrous. They want to bring international superstars. I think they're going to get Jimmy Johnson to race the double next year. He's going to do 8,500 with Ganassi, and I think he's going to do the Coke 600 with Trackhouse. I think they might get Elio Castroneves for the Indy 500 next year. I think they'll get potentially, you know, Kimi Raikkonen again next year, maybe Daniel Ricciardo from Formula One next year to do some of these road course races. Their goal is to grow this thing to be monstrous, and I don't think this is a test session for them. They want them to do well. Justin Marks said Kimi Raikkonen is going to haul ass, so I don't think that means they're going to be testing with him.
So that another question we got on Twitter was, the first part was, how much ownership will Kimi get? That's
impossible to answer.
After qualifying, we don't know that. But how will he finish? And obviously his upside, because we have nothing. Like, and I'm pretty sure he just got into a stock car for the first time like last
year. No, he raced an Xfinity race several years ago. I mean, in 2011. He raced a truck race in 2011. Both of those were on ovals, which is he had never done before, right? Right. So we have to discount that. I mean, he's a Formula One guy. He races road courses, street courses, you know, natural terrain road courses, those kind of things. But he has raced in stock cars before. He's raced rally cars. He's raced Formula One. Like, he's driven a lot of different cars. It's not like he's not been in a stock car before. He tested at VIR, Virginia International Raceway, last weekend in the stock car, in the Trackhouse car. It's not going to be the one he races on Sunday, this coming Sunday, but it is another Trackhouse stock car. He got to do pit stops. He got to, you know, learn all of the procedural things and stuff like that. So Justin Marks, in his quotes about Kimi Raikkonen, he's not worried about the speed. He says Kimi's going to be fast. He's going to be hauling ass and every possible thing about speed. He says Kimi will be fast. He's more worried about the procedural issues. Does he know where the caution lights are? Does he know the pit road lights, when it's green, when it's red, you can't come in, you can pit? Does he know, you know, about the buttons on the steering wheel to make sure he hits the speed limiter, the lights on the dashboard, all this stuff? You know, like, does he know about wave arounds and all that? Like, those are the things that he says will be the biggest learning curve for Kimi. The speed is going to be the easiest part for Kimi Raikkonen, because the guy's a world champion, a Formula One world champion. He literally is the peak of the world at race car drivers at one point in his career. And he still was kicking ass in his Formula One days, as recently as 2021, last year, when he outpaced his teammate. Yes, it was for a shitty team, but at that point, we're in a shit. Formula One is all about equipment, so all you can really do is compare to your teammates. And he beat or tied his teammate in points each of the last 3 years for the shitty, I think it was like Aston Martin team or something. I'm not a huge Formula One guy, but I do know that he beat his teammate all 3 years, or tied him in points. I think it was one tie, and he beat him pretty handily twice. And I think one of those even included Raikkonen like missing a race or two. So he still has it. He's still good. He knows how to race road courses. Yeah, there's a difference between Formula One and stock cars, but guess who else went from Formula One to stock cars? Juan Montoya. He won at Sonoma in his rookie year in Cup. Now, yes, it wasn't his first race in Cup, but it was his rookie year. He won in his first road course race. So that says you can make the transition from Formula One to stock cars and be successful. Again, not quite fair, because Montoya had 12, 14, whatever races under his belt at that point by the time they got to Sonoma. But he did win in his first road course race in the Cup Series, coming over from Formula One.
I feel like it's there's kind of like, obviously we have no relevant data on this guy. We're going to get practice. We're not going to get much practice. I don't even know. You can go either way. I know I could go either way. You know, if he's super fast in practice and people are going to be on him, like, I'm going to fade him. If he's slow in practice and people are going to be on him, I'm going to go away from him. Like, I get what you're saying with the Trackhouse thing. I just, I don't have any idea.
What if I told you this? What if I told you Trackhouse is putting AJ Allmendinger in a third car? You wouldn't be worried about the equipment or testing or experimental car. You'd be like, AJ Allmendinger in a Trackhouse car. Holy shit, right? That's kind of what we're getting here, just minus the experience. That's what we're getting, minus the stock car experience. I don't think this is a test car. That's what I have to say. I do not think this is a test car. I think they're in it to make a splash. If Kimi Raikkonen wins this race, do you know how monstrous that is? Not only for NASCAR, but for Trackhouse specifically. You know what that does for them? That is monstrous to have a Formula One world champion win a race in NASCAR.
If there's any organization that's going to put full effort into a situation like this, it's Trackhouse.
Justin Marks is a road course racer. He has designed this team to be successful at road courses with the next gen car. We've talked about this before. I don't see why all of a sudden they'd be experimenting with Kimi Raikkonen. Project is a not a project to experiment with cars and test setups. It is a project of theirs to grow something massive. So let's not misuse the term project here. The project here is to do something that has not been done in NASCAR before.
So obviously you bet him 125-1 when he opened. And there were plenty of people hammering this, because every single book that he opened anywhere near that quickly got bet down to 50. I'm pretty sure he's still at 50 on DraftKings.
He's 35 in Canby books.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is 50 worth anything?
Man, honestly, I don't think so. So let's go back to the numbers here. I may have made a bad bet at 100-1, but I think at 125-1, we're pretty break even, because my model says 125-1 is spot on for Kimi Raikkonen. So I got him 100-1 when he opened at Westgate, and then 125-1 at Caesars. Put a quarter unit on each, $25 on each. My model says 125-1 is dead on break even for Kimi Raikkonen. And this is just using Trackhouse equipment for his equipment statistical prior, and the standard making your Cup Series debut with no truck, cup, or Xfinity, like, real history. I mean, again, 11 years ago, he raced one truck race and one Xfinity race, then called the Nationwide Series. So this is my standard rookie penalty for guys coming over to Cup who don't really race in any of the top three series. There's not enough data to really assess them. So this is just my standard penalty for them. And, you know, some drivers do better than that, and some drivers do worse than that. The standard penalty means we're going right in between them. That's what we're, you know, like when you fit a line to data, some will be higher and some will be lower. That's what we're doing here with the rookie penalty. Some will be higher, some will be lower. I tend to think Kimi Räikkönen will probably be on the higher side of that, but I'm still giving him the average penalty for a rookie because I don't know if he'll be higher or lower than any other random driver who comes in a cup for a one-off who hasn't raced in cup trucks or Xfinity before or like within like one or two races here or there. So he's getting the standard penalty and then the Trackhouse equipment. Maybe I could give him a penalty for the Trackhouse equipment. I just don't think that's very fair because we don't know how that's going to play out. We don't know if he's going to be in a worse car there. There seems to be speculation that he would be, but I don't see any reason why he would be. We've seen other one-off or fifth car type teams be not very good. But we've also seen examples of good ones. So, I understand people will point out the bad examples if they want to be down on Kimi Räikkönen. But they're also good examples of some one-off or added cars as well.
Practice will be very interesting. And I can't wait to see how the betting lines move with practice. Because if he comes out and he, practices top five, qualifies top five, I mean, are we going to see this guy at 15-1?
Yeah.
On Sunday?
We will if he practices and qualifies right up there. Yes, we will.
Because I don't remember where Joey Hand ended up at Road America, but, he qualified 9th. He looked great in practice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember, what his odds moved to. Ended up 21st.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like I said, Kimi Räikkönen got track time at VIR. He's going to get 20 minutes of practice time. He is a talented enough driver. I think it's pretty obvious he's a Formula One world champion. He's a talented enough driver to figure how to go out, how to go fast in those 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see where DraftKings prices him on the DFS side because they typically go by betting lines.
Yeah.
It's pretty equal.
I'd say in the upper sixes.
When there's movement like that, though,
upper sixes.
Do they go off their initial betting lines and don't move it, or do they go off the moved lines?
Yeah, that's a good point. I personally, and this isn't even a joke or anything, so when I run my simulations, the way my code is set up, I need to have DraftKings and FanDuel salaries in there because I simulate everything at once. So since I didn't know him yet and I wanted to run my simulations, I had to throw in a salary, and it was like he kind of fell in perfectly in line when I'm looking at some drivers and my odds to where if I compare it to like Richmond or something, that kind of driver range, $6,900 was open. So I think he's going to be $6,900.
I don't see it.
I think he's going to be $6,900.
I think he's going to be low sixes, high fives, just because of how they've been pricing road course races. They've been shuffling down those prices.
I mean, what do you think Ty Gibbs is going to be?
Mid sevens.
I don't think he's going to be super massively lower than Ty Gibbs.
You don't think?
No. I mean, they're at the same odds. They open at the same odds at DK. I think Räikkönen opened shorter. Räikkönen opened at 50 at DK. Ty Gibbs opened 100 at DK.
No, Räikkönen, he opened at 100.
Not at DK. Räikkönen opened 100 at Westgate. He opened 50 at DK.
I thought he moved.
Maybe he did. Ty Gibbs definitely opened 100 at DK. 100%. 100% Ty Gibbs opened 100 at DK because then I was like thinking like maybe I should bet, when I started talking to PJ. And then I came back to it and it was like, oh, he was down to 50 or whatever. So I definitely could be wrong on Räikkönen opening 100. I feel like, it's in my Action Slack here, Action Network Slack.
I'd bet money that he opened 100 on DK.
Kimi 50. I posted it right when he opened. Kimi 50 at DK. 100% guaranteed that's what it was. I posted it.
Where did he first open at 100 then?
At Westgate.
Caesar
at Westgate.
And then Caesars was second to open, and they opened him at 125.
Caesars was third to open. It was Westgate, DK, Caesars.
I mean, on the apps. Westgate apps.
Exactly. Sure.
Because I don't even think I have access to Westgate.
Yeah, that's in like two states or something.
And they won't even let you browse the lines unless you have an account.
Yeah.
And you can't open an account unless you're in Vegas.
Well, next time you're in Vegas.
I know. I've honestly never been to Westgate.
It's the
As many times I've been to Vegas, I've never been to Westgate.
It's the premier sportsbook, period.
Add that to our list the next time I'm out in Vegas.
Sounds like a plan.
We're going to Westgate.
Absolutely. I watched The first race I ever watched at Westgate was the race Denny Hamlin threw away to Tony Stewart.
Oh, God.
That was the first race I ever watched. Yeah.
I can't imagine what you were feeling that race.
A lot of frustration. But I think I watched another race at Westgate, too. Like, the two first races I ever watched were that one, and there was another one when I was doing, like, a house hunting trip or something. And I forget who won, but I had bets on second, third, fourth, and fifth to win. The guys who finished second through fifth to win. I was so mad.
PJ Walsh special right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Looking at road courses in general this year, we talked about it last time. The fast guys end up front unless it's Indy road course and there's chaos at the end. Have you done any correlation between practice speeds and actual green flag speed?
Yeah.
I probably should have asked you this earlier in the day.
Yeah, I have. I didn't prep anything for it, but I mean, obviously practice speed.
I'm just curious because it came up in my head.
Practice speeds definitely correlate. It just the issue is it's not like super great because we don't get long runs in practice at right. road courses, so it's hard to tell. Like if you went by practice speeds at Sonoma, you would have thought JGR would have been awesome, and some of us did, myself included, thought JGR would be really good because they had really nice short run speed. By God, were they awful on the long run. So then it didn't really correlate with green flag speed. But then all the JGR cars made a late pit stop in hopes of some miracle late caution where everybody else would have to come in and they'd cycle to the front because tires mattered so much. So they ended up putting a few fast laps down at the end of the race. So, you know, it's always hard to say. But I mean, obviously there's some correlation. It's just it's so hard to tell. Because we don't get long run speeds at road courses.
Just kind of going through here. Green flag speeds of the four road course races this year. Chastain led it at Circuit of the Americas. Chris Buescher had the best green flag speed at Sonoma. Chase Elliott had the best green flag speed at Road America. And Tyler Reddick, the best green flag speed at Indy road course. Everyone with the best green flag speed this year on a road course has finished first or second.
Yep.
Just a quick little note there.
Yep.
Which is always good to see. You like to see the fast cars actually finish up front. And, you know, the first two road courses of the year, we saw Trackhouse take them both. I wouldn't say they fell off, but they've definitely, I think they've lost a little bit of a step compared to Tyler Reddick, Chase Elliott, guys like that.
Maybe. I mean, Chastain had some really early issues at Indy where he was in a few wrecks and got a lap or two down. So he never had track position all day. And then he almost won the race with the cutting the chicane and whatever, you know? So, I mean, he was right up there at the end, even without cutting the chicane, he would have been in a top five-ish position after having come from a lap down and some multiple incidents. So I don't know if he's necessarily fallen off. He just obviously fell victim to some incidents there at Indy. Maybe Suarez did, but like Suarez was still running in ninth or 10th or whatever it was, eighth, when that sequence of late caution started. Because I remember because I had a top 10 bet on Todd Gilliland, and Gilliland was right behind Suarez at the time, and Gilliland was running 10th and Suarez was running 9th. So maybe a little bit, but like, yeah, it also could just be, you know, fluctuations as well, track position, variance, etc. I could see them being the fastest ones at Watkins Glen. It's certainly possible.
One guy that we talked about with when we were previewing Indy road course as a guy that hasn't been a great bet on road courses and DFS wise has been a guy to be underweight on that. I think you might have the opposite opinion on this week. Just, I think I saw a tweet about him from you. And this was another question we got. Is this the week? I think this is from Buddha Man. AJ Allmendinger. Watkins Glen, his best track, road course wise. Is he a play this week? I think you bet him.
I did. I bet him 25-1 only because 25-1 is too long.
He's now at 15.
And you can't bet him at 15. My model says AJ Allmendinger is right there at 4% to win. So 25-1 maybe wasn't the greatest bet. But remember, my model will always underrate AJ Allmendinger because of the way it works with road courses. It factors in year-to-date performance because it matters as a whole. Holistically, it matters. But for certain drivers like AJ Allmendinger, it doesn't matter as much. It's just that when you have to interpolate it through the whole field, it means it'll bring him down artificially. So I think Allmendinger is a value at 25-1. I don't think he's a value at 15-1. He's as short as I think I saw 12 or 13-1 at FanDuel for AJ Allmendinger. Let me flip over here real quick. Yeah, he's 13-1
at MGM.
13-1 at FanDuel, 12-1 at MGM. So there's just no value there in Allmendinger anymore. I do think 25 was value. This is his best road course, in my opinion. And yeah, so I think you can play him this week. I just don't think it's like a go smash overweight on him. There's a lot of uncertainty at road courses, and there are a lot of good road course drivers. Obviously, Elliott, Reddick, Larson, right? Obviously, Ross Chastain is going to factor in. Obviously, Austin Cindric should factor in. Daniel Suarez should factor in. Blaney's been fine. He may have to points race. Briscoe has been a factor most of the time this year. Not always, but some of the time. Christopher Bell was a factor at Indy. Kevin Harvick could have won Sonoma, and he's been on fire lately. Christopher Buescher has been the fourth or fifth best this year at road courses in various metrics. Keselowski ran up front at times. I mean, there are no shortage of drivers that could do something here. So it's hard to be woo Allmendinger until, I see how the lineups and the starting positions and the practice speeds and everything shake out.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of practice positions, we always like to talk about pole winners. Chase Elliott, Tyler Reddick, co-favorites to win the pole 5-1. You look at road course qualifying this year, Tyler Reddick's top five every single race. Chase Elliott started on the pole at Road America, started second at Sonoma, eighth at Indy Road Course, and 12th at COTA. Are those two bets worth making there at 5-1? I know we hate betting favorites, but I feel like this is the week to bet the damn favorites, as much as I hate to say it.
It is definitely a race for, I wouldn't say for favorites, but certainly for guys who can get it done at road courses. I mean, you look at Marcus Ambrose, you look at AJ Allmendinger, you look at Juan Montoya, Robbie Gordon. These are road course racers. And even to this day, the Chase Elliotts, the Martin Truex Juniors are the guys winning these races. Kyle Larson's, Tyler Reddick's. So I don't necessarily think it's going to be a Chris Buescher or Michael McDowell. But at the same time, they've been damn good this year at road courses. So it's hard to say, right? Are they the Robbie Gordon of this year type thing where he can pop off at a road course, type deal? I don't know. But you're right. I mean, it certainly should favor the bigger road course drivers, bigger teams. Maybe this favors a Ross Chastain again. I don't know. The guy who's been fastest all year.
Mm-hmm. Another guy to look for last two races qualifying-wise, Chase Briscoe. Qualified third at Indy and qualified second at Road America, pulling up his odds right now to win the pole for Watkins Glen. 10? Yep, 10-1.
Yeah, I'm not really, and then, of course, not really on pole bets this week. I just kind of want to focus more on the race, I think.
I'm just a degenerate, and I love betting pole.
Sir. And there are a lot of people that do, and I don't blame. I bet pole last week, and it didn't go well. It's one of those things where it could work out, but it's very hard to hit the pole winner because it's just a one-off or a two-off lap. Right. Lap. You have to put down two fast laps, and that's it.
I just feel like this is going to sound dumb, but I feel like I'm due because at Michigan, my bets were Bell, Cindric, and Reddick, or no, Bell Cindric and Logano or something, and they qualified all top five, but none of them hit the pole.
I think a few people had that. Yeah, I think a few people had that issue. Yeah. I bet. I think it was just like Custer in that one race. I forget which race it was, but it's like, I'm just going to bet Custer. And he went from like 201 to 40 to one close or something.
Yeah.
And then he just put up a stinker.
I think that, yeah, I remember that. I forget what race it was though. It might've been, I think it might've been race before Richmond. Nah, I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, I don't remember.
I just lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? Watkins Glen.
I don't know. I mean, we do have, like we said, we've got Kimi Raikkonen in the field. We've obviously got Danny Kvyat again. We've got Kyle Tilley in the BJ McLeod car. We've got Joey Hand in the 15 again, which is always interesting. And we've got another new driver, Mike Rockenfeller. This is the race. The
Spire car.
Yeah, in the Spire car. This is the race with the most number of countries being represented in the Cup Series in a single race.
Do not tell Facebook that. NASCAR and NBC posted that earlier today, and that comment section was the most toxic thing I've seen
all week. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
Whew. People are dumb. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. It's worth noting. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's super fantastic.
Like, I don't think any of them outside of maybe Kimi is going to do anything, but it's still cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, Daniel Suarez might.
I forgot about Suarez.
Yeah, no, he might. It may not be anybody else that does, but certainly I think Daniel Suarez could, and maybe Kimi. But, you know, it's great. It's great for the series, and people complain that NASCAR has been dying or it isn't what it used to be or whatever. Well, how do we get more attention on this sport? How do we get more money in the sport? You bring over eyes that don't watch this sport. More eyes means more money. More money means a better sport, right? So I think this is a good thing for NASCAR to have all of this diversity. I know there are people that don't like diversity, and you know what? You're just going to have to deal with it because this is where we are now, and this is good for the sport. It will grow the sport. If somehow, and I alluded to this before, if somehow Kimi Raikkonen wins or finishes third or finishes fifth, it's going to be monstrous news in Europe. European eyeballs will be on this race, especially if he does really well and makes a return. When Fernando Alonso ran the Indy 500, the European eyeballs on the Indy 500 were way more than they were in prior years. Big names bring eyeballs, and eyeballs mean advertising dollars and TV dollars. So and sponsorship dollars. That's a good thing.
It's hard to argue that, but you know that there's certain people that will, you know.
Yeah.
Who needs the TV money? We should set our own race times. Well, the sport needs the fucking TV money because that's how it survives.
Yes.
I want earlier start times too, but I'm also cognizant enough to realize that it's not going to happen. That the networks determine this, and they do what they can to maximize ratings, which is later start times.
Yeah, like, their data shows later start times are better for them.
Mm-hmm. So, a couple, you know, you mentioned a couple longer shots this week: Michael McDowell, Chris Buescher. Anywhere else that, you know, you might have a chance, you know, any good top 10? I haven't bet a single thing yet this week.
I did make one top 10 bet on a driver who's kind of under the radar, Cole Custer.
I like that bet.
Plus,
very underrated.
Plus 380 to finish in the top 10. Both myself and Jim Sonnes show value on that bet there. So why the hell not? Let's go for it. And I think he has one top 10 finish this year at a road course. I think it was at COTA. I think he finished in the top 10.
He also finished. I don't know if he finished at COTA, but he finished ninth at Indy.
He did not at COTA, but he was running kind of towards the front most of the race. His average running position was 13th, and halfway through the race, he was in the seventh place position. You know, very, very solid day from there. He had the ninth best average green flag speed at COTA. He had the ninth best average green flag speed at Road America among non-DNF cars. So, you know, two top 10 average green flag speeds. How can you not bet him for a top 10?
He's one of those guys. He's always very, very low owned in DFS because everybody looks at his finishing position at these road courses and they're like, oh, he's had like one good race. But he usually qualifies too high to play him. Mm-hmm. But when he doesn't, like if he qualifies 17th, I'm going to be all over Custer this weekend.
Yeah.
If he qualifies there, because I just know where ownership's going to end up then. Like you look at when he finished, or at Road America, when he had that good running position and green flag speed, he qualified 10th. Like I'm not going to play Cole. I'm probably not going to play that much Cole Custer, especially in high dollar. I'm not going to play Cole Custer starting 10th, but I'll definitely play him starting mid teens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Cole Custer, very underrated road course racer.
And remember when Stuart Haas Racing was good in 2020? We raced two road course races that year. It was the whole pandemic thing. We didn't race Watkins Glen. We didn't race Sonoma. We raced Daytona Roval and Charlotte Roval. He had the fourth fastest green flag speed and the ninth fastest green flag speed at those two races when Stuart Haas was like good, good. If they're making a return to being good again, as we've seen recently, and now we're at a high-speed track where they've shown speed recently at Pocono, at Michigan, a high-speed road course. I mean, it's not a high-speed track in general, but a high-speed for a road course. This could play right into Cole Custer's hands. It could be a Cole Custer-style race, and he could finish top 10.
I can definitely see that. I'm right there with you. Sticking on the Stuart Haas thing, can Kevin Harvick go back to back to back?
Yeah, he can. Why not?
At Watkins Glen.
Why not?
Like, I mean, you know, 3 weeks ago, if you would have told me Kevin Harvick's going to go back to back, I've been like, it's not going to happen. There's 0% chance. Not zero, but like, it's not going to happen. He might contend at Richmond. All of a sudden, he's got two wins, and I'm like, Kevin Harvick, like, I just can't. I don't think I'm going to bet him, but you can get Harvick right now at, oh, I got top 10 odds up. I think he's like at 28, if I remember it. 28 at MGM.
Yes, 28 at MGM. my model says it's not value, you know, but that's only because there's so many good drivers that it dilutes it for everybody. And he hasn't been stellar this year at road courses. He's been good. He had a good run, obviously, at Sonoma, which, if we're discounting, he wasn't quite as good at the other three. Still been fine, just hasn't been amazingly fast. So he can. He's won at Watkins Glen before, I believe. So, you know, there's obviously he could recapture his old magic and go back to back to back. 2.5% chance, as my model gives him, is not a 0% chance. It's still 2.5% chance. So, yeah, he can. Do I think he will? No. Do I think it's going to much more likely come down to some of these bigger name drivers? Yes. Do I think I'm going to lose money this week betting? Yes.
you should expect that every week, though.
But absolutely, you should. I just can't bring myself to bet a driver at 5-1 or a driver at 6-1 at these road course races when my model is saying plus 667 is break even for Tyler Reddick and plus 7 whatever is break even for Chase Elliott. I can't bet him at 5 and 550 or 5 and 6.
I guess I'm just more of a degenerate than you then.
There you go. And I don't have a problem with that. Like, I bet it was a year or two ago. It was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. It was whatever year Chase Elliott won at Watkins Glen. That wasn't last year, but I think that he won both of the previous 2 years. I did bet him at like 550 or something, but that's when he was like winning everything at road courses.
Yeah.
So I did bet him at 550 one of those years and won, but it's pretty rare I bet a favorite at a road course. I have bet favorites each of the last 2 weeks. Remember Truex last week and Kyle Busch the week before. I think both at around 7-1, maybe 8-1 with one of them or 7-1. I can't remember the exact numbers, but both at least at 7-1, but it's 7-1, not 5-1. And it's an oval, a more predictable oval, not a road course.
I hear you. One guy that's sneaky, sneaky good and tends to out finish where his speed actually is. He's 10-1 for a top 10 this week. Justin Haley. Any thoughts about him?
No. You hate him? I mean, I don't hate him. He hasn't shown very well. Some people saw my tweet that I made about green flag speed as a percent of fastest, you know, the metric we talked about earlier at road courses. He's 24th this year. Joey Hand's 23rd. I'd almost rather have Joey Hand top 10 than Justin Haley top 10.
What about a guy also 10-1, has not got the finishes on road courses this year, but has a decent history at Watkins Glen, especially qualifying wise, Eric Almirola, with the regenerance of Stuart Haas speed?
He's one of those guys I just completely ignore at road courses. He has 2 top 10s in his career at road courses in 32 starts. So we're talking 1 out of 16. And one was in 2019 with Stuart Haas. One was in 2018 with Stuart Haas. So they're both with Stuart Haas. Let's look at his Justice Stuart Haas career. 2 out of 19. So it's like 9.5-1. Or I should say plus 850. 1 and 9.5 plus 850 would be break even. Potentially. But they were both at Sonoma, not at Watkins Glen.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not really there on Eric Almirola.
Typically, road courses this year have been the, hey, let's sprinkle some salt on Bubba Wallace top Toyota because crazy odds. Well, we all know it hit Indy Road Course, last road course. Bubba, last time I checked, was 15-1 top Toyota.
Yeah.
Like, no. Like, anybody listening to this, that it's like how we've talked about this in the past, where we've bet Bubba several times this year to be top Toyota at road course, do not bet him at 15-1. I wouldn't bet him at 60-1.
Yeah, he's
at Watkins Glen.
He's 20-1 at the Candy Books. And I think those are the only two that have posted manufacturer odds. Unless Caesars did recently. No, they haven't. So yeah, I'm not betting Bubba Wallace at 20-1 to be top Toyota.
Yeah. And I'm just going up the list of names that are sticking out to me here. Michael McDowell's at plus 150 for a top 10. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you bet that?
No, I just bet his outright. Full disclosure, I'm expecting to lose this week. Like, I'm expecting to lose money this week. I don't think my bets are necessarily bad bets. I think the two worst of any of them are the Raikkonen and the Almendinger bets, which are pretty borderline. But I will stand behind my McDowell, my Buescher, even my Keselowski bet is showing value. I got about 50-1 at open at the drop at Westgate. My model showing 2.1% to win versus like 1.9 or whatever it is implied odds at 50-1. So little value, thin value there on Keselowski. 2.2% to win is my model. And Brad Keselowski, this was his best road course for Penske. We talked about this. He was always a guy that was good at Glen, bad at Sonoma. And with RFK testing at Watkins Glen and finding that something that helped them also at Sonoma. You remember Keselowski ran really well, just like Buescher did.
Yeah.
If that applies, but here and even better for Keselowski, I can see value at 50-1 there. And I'll stand behind my Custer 10-1, or not 10-1, top 10 bet is what I'm trying to say there. So I'll stand behind those. I could see maybe my Kimi Raikkonen bet being iffy. Can understand that. I understand the arguments against. I really do. I just think there's enough upside there that I'm betting the upside, right? If I was betting him for a top 10 finish, I'm not betting him plus 170 for a top 10. I'm betting his pure, raw upside on a win bet. Because it's there. I think it's there. I think if you, if you said Ross Chastain or Daniel Suarez were 125-1 in a track house car, you'd bet
them. Prove it.
You'd bet them. So why not Kimi Raikkonen? But that one, I understand the questions. I do. I very much understand them. But I'm okay with that bet. I think there's upside. I think there's a lot of downside, but I think there's a lot of upside. He has a very wide range of outcomes. And then the AJ Allmendinger one, I think, is like right borderline. My model, as I said, just says that's basically break even, but my model always underrates him.
Mm-hmm. And full disclosure, I was trying to get action on Kimi. I just, by the time I got to the border, it all shifted down and I wasn't going to bet at 50.
Right, right. Yeah, I wouldn't bet it at 50.
Yeah. I was trying to get it at least 100 and it just didn't happen. Matchup wise, I saw PJ put out an article, Ryan Blaney versus Kevin Harvick. Harvick's at +140 and he really likes Harvick in that. You on board with that?
Yes, I sure am. I haven't bet it myself, but I am 100% on board with that, and I actually need to make that bet. So that is what I will be doing if I remember after this podcast. I've said I'd do it before after the podcast, and I forgot, right? So, but yes, I love that bet. Harvick, my model says, is break even at +120 versus Ryan Blaney. So +140 is value.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't even include the circumstances where what if Blaney's points racing, and I think he should be, then it becomes even more value. So yeah, I like that bet a lot. I do.
And that's just I love getting matchups at +140, especially when it's, I mean, even taking out the circumstances, I think that's really close.
Truex was +3 something versus Chase Briscoe at Indy or at road course. Remember that? Cause I won that bet as well. It was like +300.
Like, I don't remember that.
I was taking candy baby.
I was gone that weekend. I didn't even watch the race.
Right, because I hit those two top tens. I hit a 4-1 bet on something. I don't remember what it was. And then I hit the 3-1 on Truex. So I'll just Google it. Not Google it. Twitter it. Burton Gilly Rotodoc. Maybe I need to do Gilland. I'll just do Burton Rotodoc. How about that? Yeah. So, okay. So this is what I had: Dinger to win his group at 4-1 and Truex over Briscoe at 3-1 plus the top 10 on Gilland, 30-1 and the top 10 on Burton, 34-1. I mean, that was a day. That was a day.
That was a day. Plus I had the Bubba 100-1.
Yeah, which I'm kicking myself for not taking because I said I was going to take it. And then I forgot. That's exactly one of the examples I'm talking about where I was like, I'm betting this. And then podcast ends and I get distracted. I grab a beer or get some food because you and I record at 7:30 and I'm usually busy from 6 to 7. Which is why we record at 7:30. So I usually don't have time to grab a bite. Sometimes I'll grab a bite, you know, like right before the podcast, or last week I was chomping away during the podcast. But I haven't eaten today. So like, I'll probably end up getting distracted and forget whatever bet I'm supposed to make. Harvick Park +140 over Blaney. I like that bet a lot. And I think you all listening, if it hasn't moved, should make that bet. And remind me to make that bet if I haven't. If you haven't seen it come across, because that is a trackable one in the app. If you haven't seen that come across by the time you listen to this podcast, make sure to remind me.
Yeah, I like that value. I usually, typically after you and I talk here, I go over and hit some bets just to get them locked in. I think I'm definitely going to go hit that one for sure. I'm still on the fence about, like, I can't make up my mind about Chase Elliott. I think I'm going to definitely bet Reddick for the pole and probably, like, I'll probably put like half a unit on Reddick for the pole and half a unit on Chase for the pole and just call it a day, and then they'll qualify second and third.
Yeah,
because that's how it goes. But yeah, anybody else you want to talk about this week?
I think we covered most of them. I mean, I don't think there are any surprises there with Daniel Kvyat or whatever his name is. He was in a slow Heseberg car. He did well for being in poor equipment. I mean, well-known drivers on Twitter, road course racing drivers on Twitter who run in NASCAR, I think it was Andy Lally maybe, or somebody along those lines, was very complimentary of Danny Kvyat at Indy, but it was still a Team Heseberg car, and that team was slow. And he still looked fine. And I think Kimi Raikkonen's a better driver than Danny Kvyat, and he's in way better equipment. I don't think there's any comparing Trackhouse to Team Heseberg. But, you know, that's just kind of where I'm going with this is, I mean, Danik Fiat raced his first ever race maybe in a stock car, and he did just fine. And people were very complimentary of him. And this won't be Kimi's first rodeo ever in a stock car. Certainly the first in a long time, but he got to test at least. So, you know, I think he's going to be just fine. There will be procedural things, but he's been, Justin Marks has been very complimentary of his studying, his preparation. I don't think Kimi Raikkonen's the kind of guy that's just going to like slack off because he's never been that way. So, you know, I don't really have anything new on any new drivers. I just think when we look at Danik Fiat and how, I wouldn't say successful. I mean, obviously there are some problems with the car and things like that for why he didn't finish the race, but I think he had a solid race and, you know, competent NASCAR drivers who are road course specialists were complimentary of him on Twitter. I think that bodes well for Kimi Raikkonen.
Piece of news that missed to talk about earlier. Bubba Wallace announced an extension with 2311. And also talking about 2311, you mentioned Ty Gibbs. I haven't seen anything official, but I think we're both assuming Kurt Busch is going to be out again this week.
I think so.
Which was kind of like the, you know, consensus outside of a couple people last week.
Yeah.
I'm honestly leaning toward he's done for the year.
I can understand that. I think the thing was, I do think he thought maybe he was getting ready to come back because he was starting to do more activities. And when he got in that simulator, it was like, oh God, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that simulator was a big red flag for him. Like, I am not there. So I don't think it's this week. There's no way he's coming back for Daytona if he's not coming back this week. If he does come back this week, obviously I can see him racing at Daytona because that means he's fine. But theoretically speaking, but if he's not racing this week, there's no way he's racing Daytona. So then it becomes a question of does he race in the playoffs or not? And that's kind of where we go from there.
It's going to be the controversy of do you replace him and not, and we've already talked about that.
Yeah. So we just have to see how it plays out, but I think there's little chance he races this week. And if not this week, there's zero chance he races at Daytona.
Mm-hmm. All right, who's doc blocked this week, by the way?
The 7 car of Corey LaJoie.
Oh, man. I don't even think he needed that bad luck. He's so bad on this road courses.
Yeah, he hasn't been great.
Guess who I got? I finally got a good car.
I saw it and I forgot. The 9?
Close.
The 8.
Yeah.
You got Reddick. Well, that's another reason to bet Chase Elliott.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say because I haven't had a top 10 since Gateway.
It's fair.
I haven't had a top 18 since Gateway.
And Reddick's had a lot of problems this year.
Talking me into that chase bet. But yeah, who's your pick to win the race, so?
I'm going to go Kyle Larson.
Ooh.
I'm going to go Kyle Larson.
Wasn't expecting that one.
I mean, he's third in my model, and he's been good here. He's been good at road courses in general. Just hasn't quite had the speed of Elliott or Reddick in the last 2 races. But, I mean, I think he won stage 1 at Sonoma, right? So, and then they did that stupid strategy. If they don't do that, I think he doesn't have the issues that he had at Sonoma. So, I'm going to go Kyle Larson.
I don't hate that. Most recently, I mean, he won here last year, like we talked about. Been solid, even when he was with Chip Ganassi. I'm going to go because I don't remember the last time I got that right on this podcast. I'm going to go Tyler Reddick to win on Sunday.
Going with your random fantasy pick.
Woo! Yes.
I like it. I like it. Trying to capture the Rotodoc magic of picking Tyler Reddick at a road course.
Yes.
I forget who I picked.
Hopefully that works out.
I forget who I picked for Indy, but I know it wasn't Reddick. I don't remember who I picked though.
We really need to start tracking this.
We do.
We're gonna put that as on my to-do list.
I think we both ate the chocolate with like Elliott or something.
I'm pretty sure we did.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Kyle Larson.
Larson and I got Reddick. Okay. I'm going to officially start tracking this. And if I get bored OCD this week, I'll go back and
listen to our previous ones.
But yeah, that's all I got for this week for Watkins Glen.
Yeah, me too. I don't, man. If we see some, you know, drivers like Todd Gilliland qualified ninth and end up 30-1 top 10 again or something, bet those. But
yeah,
outside of that, I think at this point, I'm just waiting for practice and qualifying, because I think I'm good with my bets. Other than that head-to-head, I need to remember that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'll be heading off to get that right now. So, good luck to everybody this weekend at Watkins Glen, and I cannot wait for next week's episode. Wow, did I turn Minnesota? I think I was a little bit from Minnesota there. Next week's episode, where we will preview the season finale at Daytona, regular season finale at Daytona. I know you're excited for that. DFS wise, yeah. you're gonna be doing your RotoDoc stuff, and yeah, I can't wait. I have my niece's wedding the night of that race.
Oh damn!
And I'm still. That doesn't mean I'm going. I need to watch this race.
Yeah, me too.
So, if there's TVs there, I'll be fine. But if not, I might be like,
Daytona's one of those races, or super speedways in general, one of those races where like your night either gets wrecked early because all your drivers that you have, you know, contrarian on get wrecked in the early big one or big ones, or you're like just praying at the end, like, please don't screw me over, you know, and that kind of thing. Occasionally, it actually has three outcomes. Occasionally, all the big names get wrecked in the early middle portion of the race, and you're not on them, all the big owned ones, and you know you're just set no matter what happens. Even if some of your guys get wrecked, you still know you're set for a nice, positive day. So there's actually like three outcomes. You either know you're fucked like partway through, you know you're in for a monster day partway through, or you're absolutely sweating it there at the end, like I was for the $1 million up until the last handful of laps. And that's, I love super speedway racing. Even when my night goes to shit early on, I still love super speedway racing because bets can still be alive and playoff positions are still alive.
Mm-hmm. And even like DFS wise, even if you're like, if your overall night goes to shit, you can still have one good lineup.
Yeah. Like, that can salvage the day.
That is DFS wise. I either results DFS wise, I either really suck or I'm really good. Like, I've never just like broken even at a super speedway. You know, I've either lost my ass or I've made a bunch.
I should say all three. I've lost my ass. I've been close to break even, and I've had monster wins, obviously, but, I've had it all. The way I play, I try to lose small and win big, but it doesn't always work that way with super speedways.
Yeah. That's what makes them so fun. So we'll be talking about that next week when we preview Daytona. But first, we got to get through Watkins Glen and go Tyler Reddick. He's going to get the win again.
But
unless he has
Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you guys next week. See ya.